Good evening again, everyone. I've enjoyed this last time and hearing what you've gleaned. I like to think of my role in a weekend like this as a chance to lay some bricks in the building that is your lives. And I count it an honor to be able to be given the opportunity to lay a brick or two in your lives. And so it's kind of interesting as you discuss some of the things you've learned to see what some of these bricks might be. It's also a serious responsibility when there are some that we've preached to since they were this high and now they're this high and something goes wrong in their lives and they walk out of the church and you think, you know, I've had all these opportunities to lay bricks in their lives and their building crumbled, their spiritual building crumbled. What have I done wrong? So it's a blessing to see youth who are endeavoring to apply themselves and learn. We're talking this evening about life in the ark. And, you know, it's not necessarily just about being productive with your elbows in, you know, tight for space. The ark wasn't all that small. This is a big building. It's probably as big a church as I've ever preached in. But the ark, I think, was bigger than this. And so I don't think it's all about that. It might seem that way sometimes. Last fall, my wife and my youngest daughter and I went to tour the Museum of Science and Industry. And I don't know if you've been there. One of the attractions they have is a German submarine that was captured in World War II, a U-boat. And if you tour that, and if you have claustrophobia, get claustrophobia, it's a good time to get it. Because you go walking through there in low doorways, and over here is a cot, and you brush past it, it's a little cot. There are bunk beds actually along the side. And that thing is about all motors and batteries and not a lot else. There isn't a lot given to human comfort in there. And the beds, they have one-third as many beds as what they have men in that submarine. And they call them hot beds because one shift gets done and you get out of there and the next person's in. It never gets a chance to cool off. 8 hours, and that's your allotment in that bed. It was tight in there. But the ark was about twice as long as what that submarine is. And the ark was about three times as wide. But it had less people in it. Well, we're trying to talk more about relationships and getting along in the ark. Now, if you had eight people, and I said the ark was probably bigger than this building, if you had eight people in here, you could probably find plenty of room not to, you could probably get lonely in here by yourself. You know, we're used to lots of people in a building such as this, of this nature, but we are created social beings. And some people are more social than others. One columnist wrote, and the reason I remembered this is because of my wife and I, but she says, at any party, there are two people, let's say this, at any party, there's always a person that would like to go home early. And there's always a person that would like to stay as late as possible. And they're usually married to each other. And that's my wife and I. And I don't know as I necessarily like to go home early, but I know I don't like to stay as long as she does after church and some things like that. So we're all different socially. And yet we need to make it work, don't we, if we're going to enjoy life. We need to make it work. Especially husbands and wives, but even a youth group or a family, whoever the social group may be. You know, God required a relationship before man could even be born, man or woman could even be born. And that was meant to be the most intimate of all human relationships. And so though we all have a father and a mother, some people don't even know who their fathers and mothers are. And so there's very little chance for one or the other at times to have much of an influence on their children. But I don't think there are very many of us who could say that. But we are the product of a human relationship, and so we are humans, which means we have a soul, and we have a mind, and we have spiritual needs, and we have perceptions, we have consciousness. And we have the ability to learn and to form opinions and to make decisions and to relate to others. We can be a positive impactor in the joy of others. We can be a negative impactor in the joy of others and in the development of others or in the attitudes of others. You can have a part in that. If someone's struggling, you can have a positive or a negative influence. I'd like you to remember that. I think so often, if somebody comes to us and makes a comment that could show their bent in life, attitudes that are developing, discouragements or anything like that, what we can say can have such an impact on which direction they go from there. Well, I decided I'm going to try to use the ark as an outline this evening, so I'm going to attempt to do that. So if you would open your Bibles to Genesis 6. I'll just read verses 9 through 11 to start with. Genesis 6, 9 through 11. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. The earth was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. A lot different than it is today. And it's a lot different than what you see on television programs today, where you have corruption and violence. A lot different than the things you can find on technology today. That was totally different back then. Okay, I'm being facetious, of course. It hasn't changed a lot. It hasn't improved a lot, has it? We live in an earth just like that today. And there is a need for people who will come out of that and step into the ark. There's a need for people who will come out of that and step into the ark. You know, there was a day of judgment coming, and the people of God were going to be separated from the people of the world. And it happened. And it even gives the date, if you can make it out, in the certain year of the certain year. I think it goes by Noah's life here. But there was help needed to prepare for that day. There was a lot of work to do. So we said the ark was bigger than this complex with the three stories, including the three stories it had in it. And so that's a lot of work to build it. And they didn't have the tools and the technology we have today. Now that's one place technology comes in. I don't know if any of you are in construction or work with tools much. What would you do without your power tools? What would you do without your cordless drill? You know, if you're in construction, those aren't luxuries, those are necessities, we say today. The positive side, and that isn't what we're necessarily talking about today, they didn't have that in those days. But I'll bet you they could have sure used it. I bet they could have cut that time down quite a bit. Okay, we've got 100 and however long it was to build the ark. But it was over 100 years, wasn't it? And so, okay, we're going to spend the next 5 years putting pitch on the ark. Sounds like an exciting 5 years, doesn't it? There was a lot of work to do. And so they needed to prepare for that day. And it wasn't always the most pleasant or exciting. But I don't believe that Noah's focus ever left preparing that ark for the saving of his family and for the animals that the Lord had chosen to take along with them to repopulate the earth again. You know, we live in a society that's seeing the moral fabric crumble. I don't believe that it's going to be very long until the Supreme Court of the United States will deem, will judge, will rule or whatever, that it is unconstitutional for any state to prevent same-gender marriages. I don't believe that day is far off. The day of this country doing the unthinkable thing is coming. Well, already we have some. And I've said at home already that you youth are going to face things in your day right amongst your neighbors and so on, including that to this point we haven't really seen much of. But there will be a day when this nation will do some of those unthinkable things that it hasn't yet. We can see the emphasis shifting. It seems like the country goes from one thing to another. The talked about women's lib, and I certainly don't agree with all the stereotypes they had of women back before that time, and I appreciate the opportunities that the women are given in many ways, as long as they fulfill their God-given responsibility. But there is terrible depths of depravity, and we often think of it in the biggest cities. I heard a story of a young man some years ago that wanted to minister to the gutter people. And so he thought if he's going to minister to the gutter people, he better go and see what kind of lives they're living and what kind of things they're doing. And so he asked an old man who was hardly able to do that anymore but had spent much of his life in that type of work. He said, "Will you show me around the city?" I don't know if it was New York City or where, but a large city like that. He said, "Will you show me around the city so that I can see what some of the needs are that I need to minister to?" And that man took him around to the city, and they saw the most despicable things. The places that are there that I don't even know about. Terrible dens of iniquity. Finally, he said, "I had enough. I can't take any more of this." And they parted ways, and he heard the man walking the other direction. The younger man heard the older man walking the other direction. And after a while, his ears detected that those footsteps had stopped. And he looked back, and here was this old man leaned against a light post. And he just cried out, "Oh God, our city is so wicked." So wicked. We need people to give hope in this world, who will preach the gospel and give hope to people. Noah was a preacher of righteousness to the lost for all of those years. And the world needs us on the ark. You know, it needs someone who will enter the ark despite those temptations that are out there in the world. It needs us to go onto the ark despite the ridicule that we're going to get for doing that. In spite of our friends that we need to leave behind to step out of that world. In spite of the beauty out there, the attractions, the entertainment, whatever it may be, it needs you and I to step out. The world needs us. The world needs us on the ark. God has you and I here for a purpose. One other minister in Wisconsin says that, and my son told me he was listening to a sermon by another minister in Wisconsin there, Todd Miller, up at Hayward. And he preached to that effect, and he told them, the youth there, he says, "You're not just Mennonite blobs." And that's kind of a way of putting it. We're not just Mennonite blobs. There's a purpose for us. Next, the vessel that we are in is stable. It's stable. The engineers today say that the dimensions of the ark are still the most stable known to man. It would have to tip more than 89 degrees to actually roll over. And it has a 1 to 6 width to length ratio, which is still used today because that's the only ratio that will make it automatically turn into the waves. I didn't realize that before. This, you know, we see pictures in the storybooks of this ark nicely contoured in the front and stuff, you know, as if it was necessary for it to be efficient in moving from point A to point B, and it's quite aesthetically pleasing. I would tend to say that the ark looked like a big box. I think it had mostly square corners. I would guess that. It's the same word that can be used for coffin or for the Ark of the Covenant, where the idea is more just a rectangular box. And so it wasn't anything of beauty, probably, but it was something of stability. And that was the idea of it. A means of salvation. You know, our relationships in the ark are dynamic, which means that they're always moving. They're not static, which stays at rest. But we still need to have stability. We need to have stability. They change as we grow up. You know, our relationship with our parents changes as we grow up. My relationship to my children is different now than when they were this age or in school or teenagers, whatever it may be. So those things change, and yet we still need the overruling stability. If not, it's serious. I don't know if you've been in a boat that you don't trust. I don't know if you've ever ridden in a boat where somebody's trying to scare you. You know, be going along and all of a sudden, you know, or something like that, and get somebody to shriek. That's what they like, usually. But we don't have that kind of thing with the ark. I don't think. Yeah, all it had to do was just stay on top of the water. I imagine the wind moved it around some, and so on. But nevertheless, it was stable. We never read. And I mean, you want to talk about storms. The fountains of the deep were broken up. And yet, it was stable. And so, how about our relationships? As you look at your relationships in life, with your parents, with your peers, and even with your employers, whoever that may be, you know, do you have stable, progressing relationships? And do you value these relationships? And do you enjoy them? You should be able to enjoy them. You know, to us as parents, of course, we trust that as children grow, that we can enjoy the age you're at. There are actually parents that dread the day when their children become teenagers, because they have this picture of their children being disappointed about something. And so they go to their room and they slam the door and sit there and pout. And you could even add to that today, then they probably call their friends on their cell phones and complain. Now, I trust that is not the situation with us and in our homes and things like that. And yet there can be a degree of that, maybe not quite as dramatic as that. But realize as our relationships change, our childishness needs to be left behind, and we need to grow and act more mature. The next one I have is that obedience is needed to get on the ark and to stay there. Noah was on the ark because he obeyed God. And I have no doubt that his family was on the ark because they obeyed Noah, which in turn was obeying God. And then as they became older, they obeyed God for themselves. Genesis 6:22 says, "Thus did Noah according to all that God commanded him, so did he." Do you get a good feeling about that type of relationship? I don't get the idea that Noah had his arm twisted behind his back. I don't get the idea that God had to threaten Noah and say, "If you don't obey me, you're going to be gurgling just like all these other people are going to be." I don't get that idea. But I get the idea that Noah wanted to please God, and God saw that. He found grace in the eyes of the Lord. You know, God has ordained relationships that are based on obedience. And these occur in about everything. If you are to be in subjection to someone, according to biblical standards, you know, be it your parents, be it the church, be it your government, be it your place of employment, at school, wherever it may be, if we are out of place, if we are disobedient, we cannot have a good relationship. It's pretty simple. I would even warn you to be careful in forming relationships with others who are not in obedience. And especially if you're seeking a marriage partner, I would raise a big red flag. And there again, we're talking about godly parents. But I would raise a big red flag to develop a relationship with somebody who is defiant and disobedient. Or even obedient in form, but is kind of cynical and is chafing inwardly and talks down about authority, makes fun of authority. I'd be very careful with that. That's one of the biggest and easiest red flags that you can use in seeing someone's preparedness and worthiness for being your life companion. And I say in subjection rather than being in obedience, because we can obey outwardly, but when we're in subjection, that shows that the heart is there too. And that's what really matters. Now, I would believe it's better to have obedience without a heart agreeing than to be disobedient. You know, sometimes people would say, I don't want to be a hypocrite, and so I'm just going to act like I feel. I'm tired of being a hypocrite and looking like a good boy, and so I'm just going to be myself. I don't encourage that at all. I think it's better to not appreciate maybe what I'll ask you and still obey than to be defiant. And maybe that would be a subject of a discussion itself. But nevertheless, it's our heart that needs to lead the way. Here they had one leader on the ark, and that was Noah, following the directions of God, and success was obtained because they were in obedience. Next one is workers are needed. There was a lot of work to do, as we already mentioned that, not only in preparing the ark, but also in getting food around. And there was maybe even a lot of work to do once they were on the ark, taking care of these animals and so on. And relationships are work. Relationships are work. You cannot love and be lazy. You cannot love and be lazy. Because by definition, at least my definition, love is when you are doing what is best for someone else, regardless of the cost to you. In other words, it involves sacrifice. You are doing what is best for someone else, regardless of the cost to you. Now, doing what is best for someone else isn't always doing for them what they want to do. When we think about the golden rule, do others do unto others, you'd have them do unto you. Sometimes we would have people say, you tell me if I'm wrong. You tell me if I'm wrong. And we think it's always to be nice to other people, and it is to be, but it's to do what's best for them. And so there are times we need to tell people what you're doing is wrong. You know, it's hard to even have a good relationship with a lazy person. Difficult. One reason is because if we are lazy, we look out for number one, how to get out of work, and we don't mind sloughing off and putting our work onto other people. And that's just a definition of laziness. I had a man one time. I was filling in for someone. We were working on production, and he shut the machine off to send a pack of lumber out, and he comes walking down towards us, and he says, yeah, I listened to this sermon yesterday. I watched this sermon on television, and it was by Charles Stanley. And he says, do you know what the number one cause is of marriage problems? And it was on the tip of my tongue to say selfishness, but I didn't. And he says, lack of knowledge. And that kind of took me offhand and whatnot. But you know what? I still think the number one problem is selfishness. Maybe he hadn't picked it up quite right, too. But you'd have to know the man to think about spiritual direction coming from him. So I don't know how he heard it. But nevertheless, selfishness is such a pitfall in good relationships. There's a lot of work to do. You know, another thing is if we're lazy, we probably don't care We probably don't care. Probably somewhere around here you have a women's room that has a one-way glass. And so you take a piece of that glass, you know, and you put it up in front of here. And so I hold it up in front of myself, and I got the mirror side toward me, and I look at it, and I say, ooh, that's scenery at its best. No, we say, oh, no. Where all those gray hairs come from, you know? And, but you know what? We say that, but that's actually the truth. That's the picture we like to look at. We like to look at ourselves. Now, if we flip that thing around, I can't see myself anymore, but I can see you. Now, that's what I should be seeing. That's care. That's care. When I don't care what I look like, but I care what you look like. And when I say look like, I'm talking about your life, not just your physical appearance. That's care. We need to care to have good relationships. It isn't like we're just in it for ourselves. Lazy people also tend to leave the dirty work for others. And of course, that's not a relationship promoter. Remember, J-O-I, Jesus first, yourself last, and others in between. Okay? Another thing to remember is we're all in the same boat. Birth can give us an advantage in some ways in that we are spared a lot of the hardships that some children have to go through in their childhood. But it takes faith to be in the ark. Sometimes people spend so much trouble, so much time feeling sorry for themselves. Oh, if you had my dad. Oh, if you had my mom. Oh, if you had my situation life. Oh, if you had my disease. Oh, if you had my looks. Oh, if you had my... It can go on and on. It just seems like you have everything going for you. And because of our perceived disadvantages, we just spend so much time feeling sorry for ourselves. We think, you know, if I could just have this or this, I would be so much nicer to live with. Or we say, I've been wronged, and that's the reason I am. Maybe I say this runs in the family, and we blame Dad and Grandpa for the way we're acting now. I realize that tendencies are inherited, but let's be careful on the blame game. You know, I may complain a lot. I may run down my parents. I may run down the church. I may run down my boss. I may run down my coworkers, and so on. There was a young girl one time who left and went to a different state, actually ran away. And eventually when discovered where she was and so on, she invited my wife and I to visit her, and we took that opportunity. In the meantime, she had started a relationship with a boy there, and they worked at a big chain lumberyard, a Lowe's, I believe it was. And we sat and listened to this boyfriend talk that evening, and he was talking about how everything, he worked so hard, and the other people are sloughing off, and he just lets him go, and he just does his job, you know, and works extra hard and stuff like that. But kept talking about these other people not doing their share. And by this time, his girlfriend's getting kind of embarrassed. And she says, well, maybe the others say the same thing about you. But, you know, we just think that we have to pick up for others. We have more than our fair share. We may be down on our luck. It just seems like some people, everything they touch turns to gold, and everything I touch turns to mud. It just happened. You know, Paul was given a thorn in the flesh so that he didn't get proud. He prayed 3 times that it would be taken away from him. But he had been given so much revelation of God, it could have been a source of pride to him. And so God kept him humble by giving him a thorn in the flesh. So maybe take it as a compliment if you have a thorn in the flesh. Maybe God thinks you need that to stay humble. You have so much going for you otherwise. While I was working on this message, I was listening to music as I usually do, and the song came on, Tempted and Tried, We're Oft Made to Wonder. And so, you know, and we look around at others, and while there are others living about anyway, they're living so wicked year after year, and yet it seems to be going well for them. And then we maybe sing verse 2, when death has come and taken our loved ones, maybe your father and mother or whatever were taken at a young age, and you had that as a disadvantage. You know, it's no excuse to have bad relationships. So we're all in the same boat. We have different problems in life, but we all have our unique things. There were different phases of the trip. Time is dynamic and moves on. We may wish we could stop the clock at a certain time and put it on hold with our bodies. You know, I enjoy getting older, but one thing I do not enjoy is a 60-year-old body as compared to a 25-year-old body. You know, I used to love to run. And I'm a slow walker, and I said, well, the reason was is when I learned to walk, I enjoyed running more, and so I would run. And now that's quite a chore. And never would you take steps one at a time, you know. And now that's plenty, one at a time. Well, that'll do for now, you know. There are some things you hate to give up, but we realize that time is dynamic. The clock moves on. We keep turning the pages of the calendar, and then we replace the calendar with the next year's, and that has gone on and on. And it continues as long as the Lord tarries. We find in our relationships that were close at one time may sour. And we rue that. You know, we regret that. People change. We long for that old warmth and that old closeness. I don't know what kind of relationships they had, the Noah's family had with the people around them, but when they started building that ark and actually stepped on it, their relationships changed. It moved. There was a separation there. You know, there was a lot of physical work, but there was a lot of mocking and there was a lot of criticism. And they probably had people going from family member to family member, to Shem, and then maybe to Ham, and then to Japheth, and maybe to their wives. You know that their wives had to leave their families behind. And so there was a separation there. Those relationships changed. It may have strained some marriage relationships, for maybe one of their wives said, oh, let's not do this. Yeah, we are going to do this. And maybe the relationship was strained. I don't know. We don't read that. But they stepped on in faith. And then they stepped on when God gave them the direction, and then all the animals followed him. And what a day of faith building that must have been when they went in there and watched this thing and the animals start filing in. Maybe once they all got on the ark, they needed to stake out their space on the ark. Okay. Ham and his wife said, okay, we're going to take this room, and maybe Shem, Ham, and Japheth take this room, and Japheth and his wife, I meant. And maybe Shem says, now wait a minute, I wanted that room. Now I'm the one that chinked the outside of that so it wouldn't leak, and I don't want water in my room. I want to make sure I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But the idea was is that they kind of maybe staked out their area. There was plenty of room for all. I was telling my mom about this when I was preparing it. And she says, well, she heard that they made a lot of extra room on the ark because they wanted to make sure there were plenty of room, that if people repented, they could go on the ark, and they wanted to make sure there was lots of room for them. So I don't know if that's the situation or not. But nevertheless, I'm sure if they were on there for a year, they had their territory, if you know what I'm saying there. But sometimes we want our domain. I don't want anybody infringing on my space. I don't want anybody infringing on my rights. I don't want anybody infringing on my privacy. I don't want anybody irritating me or disturbing me. I don't want to share my home. I don't want to share my family. I don't want to share my leisure time. I'm a private person and I don't want anyone around me, at least in my space. And then they had the long trip and just routine chores and things, and then basically just waiting it out. And so it can get long and it can try our patience. And when our patience is tried, we become short with others. And of course, that changes relationships. We can maybe have feelings of jealousy that may enter in. Already talked about one of the families maybe getting a better room than the others, but there are other things in life that cause us to become jealous And that's a real relationship destroyer. Sometimes in the courtship processes, there are choices that are made by either the boys or the girls that may cause jealousy in someone else. Disappointment, which leads to jealousy. Those can be relationship destroyers. They don't need to be. They don't need to be. Then they had to step out of the ark, and then there were 8 people on this big earth, and maybe there was loneliness. And when people get lonely, they tend to draw in. And so we need to be on the lookout for people who are lonely and those who have drawn themselves in, and we need to try to open them up. And that, to me, looks like a big job. I had a sister-in-law who, actually Annette's mother, who was just so good at talking to older folks. And we asked her one time, says, "How do you do that? How do you get these old folks to just open up and talk to you so fast?" And she says, "Oh," she made it sound really, she says, "You just look for the crack in the wall." I look for those cracks, and I can't see cracks. But some people really can. But let's keep looking at cracks, for cracks. Cracks in the wall. And so people will open up. That's a real relationship builder, especially with lonely people. Eventually these people become dear friends. And then sometimes as they become dear friends and they open up a little more, they go and make other friends, and then maybe we can get a little bit jealous. They used to be my best friend, and now they went over to their house today instead of coming to my house and didn't invite me to this. You know, different things like that. There again, jealousies can come in. Let's just look for cracks in someone else's wall and build up another friendship. You know, does your circle include everyone? It was a new experience. Embarking on a new experience is a great relationship builder. Going into service at the same place, you know, those seem to be lifelong building relationships. Maybe another country, maybe just at Faith Mission or down at Hummingbird or, you know, wherever it takes you, at a children's home or wherever it may be. Use it to good advantage and reach out at those times if there's somebody who may be lonely there. In all human relationships, it gets deep sometimes, just like the water did around that ark. It gets deep sometimes, but we can keep rising if we're aboard the ark of safety. There will be no meaningful relationships that will last if we are not in the ark of safety. I don't know what all the relationships were on the earth before the ark and the flood, but they definitely changed. They all came to an end. If we want enduring relationships, we need to be on the ark. Last of all, God remembers us. Genesis 8:1 says, "And God remembered Noah and every living thing and all the cattle that were with him in the ark, and God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters assuaged." God remembered Noah, and God will remember us. Sometimes we feel, again, feel. Be careful of feel. We feel God is forsaking us, but we know that he hasn't because of his promises, which are in his word. God remembers us if we're in the ark, just like he did Noah and his family. And it won't happen again. They only had one chance. There was only one ark. And God promised there'd never be another flood to destroy the earth. And so they had one chance. And those that were on the ark were saved. And you and I only have one chance. Because there's only one life and only one ark. Lord bless you.